Welcome to Streaming Thoughts, where we stream our thoughts on movies, TV, and all things nerdy. I am Daniel.
And I am Nathan.
And welcome to our podcast. So Nathan, what is in the news docket this week?
Are you a fan of Doctor Who?
I've seen a few of them, but I haven't really been watching it like other people have.
I was always a real big fan of the originals back when my dad kind of was getting me into all the nerdy stuff. And I enjoyed watching those black and white ones back then with him, at least. I never quite got into the new ones, but I did find it interesting with their first female doctor, Jodie Whittaker. And the pieces I've seen her, she seems to be a good doctor to me.
Yeah, I haven't really seen anything negative online about it, so that's also a really good thing.
Well, her third year as Time Lord is up, and she is retiring from the role. The doctor is ready for a new reincarnation.
Oh, so do they have someone in mind? Is there rumors or anything like that on the new doctor?
No rumors yet, but, you know, I have a couple British friends. Maybe I could poke them into trying out their acting careers. And then our favorite streaming platform, Quibi, has popped up recently.
Oh, yeah. How's Quibi doing?
Well, Quibi is long gone because no one actually wanted to watch TV series and movies in 10-minute increments.
No.
But Roku, looking to establish their own free content with their devices, has purchased all of the Quibi content.
Oh, interesting. So you know there's going to be a huge overhaul coming in the next couple of years for that company.
You don't use Roku, though, do you?
No, I don't. I used to. I did have a Roku TV, so I'm familiar with the platform.
Oh, so we wouldn't be able to just jump in with the sex doll TV show for our next episode then, huh?
No, unfortunately not.
I'll admit, the purpose of that just seemed funny, and I was like, you know, maybe I'll try out a free trial, but I just never got around to it.
Yeah, I'm very apprehensive when it comes to new platforms, right? It takes me a long time for me to jump into any new streaming platform. I have to really, really like it. I don't want to have another platform to deal with, you know? As you grow up and you become an adult kids, you have less time to do things in your life. And you don't want to waste any of this precious time you have trying to figure out where the F is that freaking TV show you've been wanting to watch. Is it on HBO Max? No, wait, that wasn't it. I think it's on CBS. Oh, no, it wasn't there. Was it on Netflix original? I can't remember. Like, seriously? No. So I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, that's going to be the problem. It's like, there's a lot of things. And even what we have for this podcast, we have so many different streaming platforms that we need to kind of bounce around on. It can be crazy sometimes.
Yeah, it can get a little much. You know, I know that there's just a race, right? But eventually we're going to get fatigued of all of these. I mean, I think most people are already reaching that streaming platform fatigue.
Talking about streaming platforms, Netflix still coming out with originals, but it's a little bit unsure of how to get those, its long-lasting impressions, I think. But they're looking. I mean, heck, you remember early on in this podcast, one of the news sections, I talked about the return of Sharkboy and Lava Girl?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was Robert Rodriguez's movie, We Can Be Heroes.
Okay.
Apparently, that was successful for Netflix. It is. Robert Rodriguez has already gotten a check for the sequel.
Wow.
Although you, without any kids, I'm sure you're just chomping at the bit to go see that movie then, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that's what I do on my Friday nights. I don't watch movies like Arrival. I watch those kinds of movies.
And another Netflix series, Henry Cavill's doing the season 2 for The Witcher, but they had to put production on hold because of an injury to his arm or shoulder.
I heard about that. I didn't really look more into it. Is it a pretty serious injury? Do we know when he's expected to go back into filming?
It sounds like it's probably a minor injury because they're not shutting down production entirely. They're just kind of pausing it for a little bit. So I'm thinking they expect him to be back up and running in a week or two.
Okay.
But it kind of led me down this rabbit hole. My wife and I just finished a show, Stumptown, with...
Oh, Kobe Smolder?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great show. I love it.
It's a great show. I loved it. Immediately wanted to know about season 2. And I looked it up. There was going to be a season 2. But because production was put on hold for so long due to COVID-19 concerns, they basically canceled the show because of that. Because they couldn't keep it on hold for that long. They needed to put their efforts and money in new directions. And that's not the only one that's been hit by this. There's other planned sequels, including a show that we both really liked. I am not okay with this.
Yeah, I heard about that too. And that really, really broke my heart because that is such a great show. And I really was looking forward to season two. Really disappointed about that for sure.
I mean, I wanted to see where they were going with season two after that shocking ending.
You mean explosive ending?
Yeah, explosive ending. Speaking about shows and movies that have twist endings that could have been explosive but was averted at the last moment, you mentioned Arrival earlier.
Yes, that is a topic of today's episode, Arrival. A movie, by the way, which I am shocked that you have not seen. What is it with you and Denis Villeneuve's movies? First is Blade Runner 2049 and now Arrival. Do you have something against them that I need to know?
No. I mean, Arrival is, you have to figure, came out when my oldest son was only 5. Yeah, sure, there's babysitters, but that was only a minor option. Not something that we could do every single weekend. So back then, we very much had to pick and choose the films that we were seeing. And a lot of films that we wanted to see just came and went from the theater without us ever finding the time to be able to get out there. And I think Arrival was just one of those ones that was like, it looks interesting. I like the idea of first contact, space, coming down to Earth, but, you know, I gotta wait. We gotta save our time and energy for a different one.
Yeah, I mean, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Ant-Man was also coming out in 2016. And wasn't that also the year that Civil War came out as well? So there were a few other big...
Yeah, I definitely saw those ones.
Yeah, 2016 was another year where you kind of had to pick and choose which movies you wanted to go see. But Arrival, for me, is my favorite sci-fi film of 2016. I went to see this movie 4 times in theaters. That's how much I loved it. With different people, obviously, each time, because they were like, I've never seen this movie. Should we go check it out? I'm like, yes, let's go immediately, because I think everybody needs to see this movie. So I've seen this film so many times now, and every single time I enjoy it, even if I know what's going to happen, I still enjoy the journey, because it's such an amazing story. Beautifully written, beautifully directed. The cinematography, the sound score, all of it. I think that this is the movie that, for me, started to really pick up who this Denis Villeneuve person was. With Blade Runner 2049, that cemented his status that he had as far as directors is concerned and quenched all of my fears with regards to Dune, because I think Denis is going to do a great job with Dune.
And I'm looking forward to Dune as well, and definitely hope we have vaccines and theaters open and can go see that one in the theater, despite Warner Brothers on again and off again decision to release it digitally.
On HBO, right.
Right. But you mentioned a whole bunch of things you really liked about this movie, and I want to start with one of them in particular, the music and sound editing.
Oh, thank you for starting with that, because I really wanted to talk about that. So, what did you think about that, though? I want to hear your thoughts first.
See, I know you have, like, really fancy sound systems and everything like that in your home, and it certainly probably may not have been a problem in a movie theater, but the sound editing and the music was on just this blaring level different from the voices and the talking of this movie. And because of the slow pace where you really have to follow the exposition in the conversations they have as they are trying to figure out the septopods, every time the music suddenly came in much louder, or the background sound editing came in like so much louder, it just was so loud, like you have the volume a certain level to clearly hear the voices, yeah. And all of a sudden it comes in so loud and it made the speakers crack because it just couldn't handle the rapid changes, and I'm like, so distracting.
Yeah, no, I think that, I don't know if what that's attributed to be honest, but I think that the sound mixing of this, I think, could have been improved a little bit. I think another movie that we talked about that kind of suffered of the same problems was, well, at least for me, it was Tenet, right? It was kind of the same thing with Tenet. So yeah, I think that I was at least able to, because of my fancier system, I was able to kind of equalize the levels a little bit so I could still hear the voices, and yeah, everything was more on a similar level. But for me, my experience because of that was a little bit different. So I tended to really enjoy the soundtrack of this, because to me the soundtrack was just so complementary of the atmosphere and the theme of unknowability. I think that combination of the two was so greatly done. I mean, right off the bat, after Luis and Ian were flying in the helicopter to see the ship, the alien ship, that music there was just the first time I heard it, I was just like, wow, they're really nailing it with the music and the atmosphere of it all and just the feel of it. I thought that that was really, really complimentary to the movie.
And you mentioned something there about them first seeing the aliens. And I kind of want to jump into that about my first experience seeing these aliens. I mean, obviously, I saw them in trailers and such. They didn't exactly hide what the aliens were looking like as a surprise for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one thing about the alien character design, as you were, that really kind of bugged me, and I had a little trouble with this.
And what was it?
The septopods look like somebody put a glove on their hand of this alien thing and was just like hanging it down and moving their fingers to create the motion of them walking with like two extras just kind of attached, not really all that visible. And that's why they put in that big cloudy thing, is because they had to hide the person's upper arm. It just looks so weird.
Yeah. I thought that the alien design was really, really great, because oftentimes, I mean, by the way, I didn't really know anything about this movie. I didn't really see any trailers about this movie. I think I may have seen like a teaser, but I didn't really know much about it. So when the aliens were revealed, I was right in there with Luis. You know, I was like, whoa, I'm seeing these guys for the first time too. I think that the design, because of it, wanted to see aliens that did not look like anything I was expecting to see, right? Because oftentimes you have this idea or this expectation of the type of creature that they're going to show. And when they finally revealed that it was the heptapod, right? This weird tentacle leg creature with that's ridiculously tall and doesn't speak. I thought that was a really great reveal, and I really like the design of the aliens. But you're right, it does look like someone just playing puppet.
I feel like I've been maybe a little bit down on this movie, and I don't want to give the impression that I think it's all bad. One thing that I really liked was the fact that they were really kind of spot on with the difficulties of establishing a communication with a completely alien race.
Yes, absolutely.
Because when you're interacting with another human, even if they don't speak the same language, there's certain shared experiences you can fall back on. Yeah, I've seen a cat. I know you've seen a cat. So if we met when you were speaking your native language of Spanish and just held up El gato, I'd be like, oh, so that must be the word for cat. But if I held that up to an alien and said cat, they might be going animal, furry, cat.
Because they've never seen a cat.
So they don't have any real context for like, what is this one word that I'm trying to associate with this thing? Because there's a lot of aspects to it.
Right. Because even though we speak different language, for example, the fact is that we have words for things that we all share, as you said, right? So that is a difference. That is the big difference between us and an alien, is that all of our experiences that we have, like what is a dog? What is a sandwich? What is a bowl of cereal? Like most, if not all human beings, or most human beings in this planet, have seen and or heard of those things. So we would be able to easily associate those words. But to an alien, those things are alien. Yeah, they don't exist.
And they make a comment like, can you hear any words or sentence structure in these sounds? And it's like, well, no, that's pretty much not possible at first. Because even if you think my example of El Gato, that's like three syllables. For an alien, is that one word? Is that three words? Is it some combination thereof? You don't have that concept of where to parse the individual breaks or anything else.
And you can make it even more complicated than that, right? You can add more layers of complexity to it. Like, what if an alien can only pick up certain frequencies? So there might be certain words that sound completely different or not at all because they can't hear certain frequencies or certain volumes, or they may not even be able to hear at all. Right? So,
I mean, heck, even assuming that they could read her little whiteboard is questionable, because you couldn't really see any sensory organs related to eyes. For all we knew at that point, they were so loud and vocals because they were emitting a sound wave strong enough to work as echolocation in a non-fluid environment.
Yeah, exactly. But the approach on how to begin to establish communication was absolutely spot on, right? Because it was a slow process that needed to be made, because you can't just start having a complex conversations with creatures that have no idea what it's like to be a human being. We have evolved here for this environment and their circumstances, and the communication tools that we have built in are specific for humans. We didn't evolve to talk to aliens.
You know, we won't be able to ever actually mimic a Chewbacca speech. It's our vocal cords just would not be able to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where I think that this movie falls into a certain category of alien films, right? And you have the fantastical, over-the-top alien movies, right? Of which you have two subsections within those. You have the Independence Day Michael Bay, and then you have other movies that are trying to be a little bit more grounded in reality, but still are over-the-top and ridiculous. And I hate those even more because it's like you're trying to be real, but then you're making it worse. Because in reality, if aliens did travel from thousands of light years away or from a different galaxy and visited Earth, we would stand no chance to fight against them. That would be like us with our current technology invading the environment of chimps and bonobos. We would wipe them out in 2 seconds, you know? And so, yeah, there will be no contest. So anything that is more grounded in reality with alien movies that are us versus them kind of thing, I absolutely hate. That's why I prefer movies like Independence Day, where we're trying to be more over the top and unrealistic.
I would actually really enjoy a realistic alien invasion story that really kind of showed, because first wave, why send down your ships? Just grab a couple asteroids from the asteroid belt and drop them on Earth. Let them take care of the early wave. And then when everything's in chaos, then you can go down there and start cleaning things up and re-terraforming to make it your new Krypton or whatever else.
Right, exactly. That'll be a very sad movie, though. It would be really, really depressing. It's basically, let's watch humanity go extinct. No, but Arrival falls into the aliens are here, but they're not here to kill us. It's more about being grounded in reality and that response that we would have as a species if aliens really landed in our planet. And I think that how this movie represented this, obviously it's Hollywood, so they're going to take liberties with certain things here and there. But for the most part, I thought that reaction of the world to the aliens was very realistic, and I really appreciated that. What did you think of it?
Well, I enjoyed it, but one thing that did kind of get me on this, and I might be sounding negative again, they understood enough about the human culture, the human world, in the reveal that we'll probably discuss a little bit later, that they knew that the world was split, and in order to get the humanity to the level that they needed them to be for whatever ultimate purpose or help that they needed in 3,000 years, they knew they had to land in 12 different places and give the information to 12 different groups. So the only way they can get it all together is if they all work together to share and fully inform each other. If they had that much of an understanding that this is something that needs to be done because of the fractured nature of humanity, how come they didn't know more about being able to give us a little bit easier time on establishing communication and everything else?
I guess that would depend on how time works in this movie, right? Because if we're following Avengers Endgame rules, then every time they make a change, they don't affect their own timeline. They just create an alternate timeline.
Well, this seemed more along like the idea of the Tenet rules, though. They weren't affecting the timeline. They just understood the cause and effect and viewed it from both sides.
The way I see it is that they knew that this is the only way that humanity could be brought together, right? Is by basically bring a greater appreciation of the collaboration that they will eventually have, because they almost started a war that could have destroyed all of them. It's kind of like they understood human nature to a certain degree, right? Like our greatest lessons come from our greatest sources of pain. Yeah, and conflicts, right? And so to me, it's more like, no, you figured it out. You knew exactly what you needed to do, because if this was an easy path, then human beings would not appreciate that as much as if this was a lot of work.
I can see that. I can follow along with that logic.
Yeah, because of how many times I've seen this movie, I've definitely ran through the like, wait, they knew this was going to happen. Why didn't they change? Or why didn't they do something different? If they knew this whole, you know, sequence of events was going to happen, right? Like, eventually I'm like, no, they probably figured that this all needs to happen. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Boomerang jumping back a little bit, you were talking about fantastical aliens such as Independence Day. What did you think about the weird space-time warping inside the ship?
You mean when they changed the environments?
So, like, the ship comes down and it's just hovering above the ground with no visible sign of propulsion. So there's some sort of weird space-time flux to keep it from falling to gravity. Then they had to lift themselves up in a cherry picker to a point that became zero gravity inside, jump off, and float to where the gravity was then on one of the floors, and then they could walk like it was the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the aliens had full control over this later on, when they just like, yeah, no, sorry, we don't want you in this room anymore. We're switching our gravity off and dropping you out. Which, how did that not kill them again? I mean, that's a long fall. So what did you think about, we don't really see much of their technology, but we see the impacts, I guess is the point. What's your kind of viewpoint of that?
Yeah, which again, to me, I like the unknowability aspect of these aliens, right? Like their technology, how it works and all of that stuff. Like they really played into the whole, look guys, we don't know and we don't want to explain how this works. You just know that they are so advanced they can do this easily, right? And I actually really appreciated that. You know, things don't have to be explained to me. I don't have to know how things work in order for me to appreciate them. In certain films, I would rather not know. I think a lot of times not knowing or sense of unknowability is really gives characters and or the plot or the writing another layer of complexity, which I really appreciate. I mean, that's what made the Joker, for example, such a fantastic villain, is the unknowability of that character, right? And so with these aliens, it's kind of the same thing, right? Unknowability of who they are, where they come from, how does their technology work? They are so far advanced that it all seems like magic, right? And this is why what I appreciated is because it seemed like magic that this felt more alien.
Yeah. I mean, any society that is far enough advanced, their technology seems magical. Like if we go to an untouched Aboriginal and show off our technology, they would be blown away by it because they just hadn't seen that kind of thing before. They didn't even see it as possible. In some ways, this is kind of a lot the same sort of thing.
Dude, I mean, did you see that video of those robots dancing? Take that and you just blow people's minds. I mean, you take that back to like, you know, 300-400 years ago. I mean, these are puppets that are moving on their own. That's how people would describe them.
Right.
You know, and mechanical puppets.
Now, can they make them not so bulky so they can fit them inside a human form android? I really want my Chobits. That Persicon.
Oh, man. Anime reference. What did you think of that, of the unknowability of the aliens and how that was represented on film?
I appreciated it. And again, much because of the same way, any deep understanding or any deep exploration of how their technology worked would have ended up being, again, probably developed in a human perspective. Buttons or levers or TV monitors or holographic technology or anything like that. And even them being able to do their writing in the air by lifting up their hand, is that like a squid's ink cloud that they're manipulating? Or is that some sort of technology? Some sort of like nanoparticle that they can manipulate in that way? There's no need to explain that because it would be pretty much unexplainable or ununderstandable to us.
Whenever I think about aliens and all these things, I'm always like, dude, it could all be magic. Like whatever we think is like, no, well, that's not possible because whatever, whatever. I'm like, dude, like 100 years ago, we thought it was impossible to go to the moon. And then we went to the moon. So who's to say that whatever things that are impossible here today are completely impossible, right? So to me, it's like that is what was represented on screen to me, is that magic. And the way that they also incorporated it with the set design was another thing that I really appreciated, because the set design for these movies, or at least the alien set, was so minimal and I loved it. What did you think of the set design?
Overall, I mean, the set design was fairly interesting because, as we discussed, they have their demonstration of the technology, which served no purpose other than to tell the audience, this is how insanely far beyond anything that you know. Having the minimalistic set design, again, keeps it very alien without showing us anything about how anything gets manipulated. I mean, heck, for all they knew, I mean, there is a lot of texture on the ground. For all they knew, they were walking on a giant keyboard and didn't even realize it. Because I was like, oh yeah, we'll just shut off this section and isolate this part of the airlock and not allow them to accidentally open up our second door or whatever.
Right. They could have just easily created that environment because they're like, well, I mean, let's just do this because this is what humans seem to be okay with. But for all we know, that room before could have looked nothing like that. And it's something that they just manufactured and created. The contrast I liked between the darkness of the walls and the white of the background of that, I thought that was really great. I think it really popped with the cinematography. You know, oftentimes when you think about creating just this gigantic source of light that illuminates this room, sometimes that can be really tricky to do, especially in, you know, with lighting when you're trying to light the characters, because you don't want to overexpose them, right, to any of that kind of stuff. So I haven't really looked into the behind the scenes for that particular thing and seeing how they actually did that. If they actually did just put a bunch of lights and lit up the whole thing, or if that was all done digitally.
It was a nice, clever way to do the lighting of it. It creates, again, this separation between them. Like, they are engulfed in light. We are engulfed in darkness. It creates that very much of us versus them environment.
Absolutely. No, and I like what you said, separation. That's a really good word to describe this.
Now, what'd you think about their alien writing?
The writing was, I thought, beautiful. Like, seriously, props to the writer and props to the art department for coming up with this stuff.
The art department just made inkblots. Psychological ink block test. Like, here you go. What do you see when you see this?
No, I totally hear you on that. Like, why I like it is because it seems so, again, going back with the simplicity of it all, right? It's complex but simple at the same time. And the fact that they added the element of sort of like nanoparticles, I think that's also what kind of gave it a little bit more weight and shape to it. And at the end, when they gave this the set of instructions, right, the one of 12, I like the fact that was all three-dimensional, right? And I think that that kind of gave it even more depth and complexity to the writing, is when you can think of and perceive language as three-dimensional, which is not something that we do now with us, right? Like, our writing is not three-dimensional.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, not only are they thinking, the explanation was like, they're writing the end of the sentence at the same time they start writing the beginning of the sentence, that just meet in the middle. So they know where they're going before they start to get there. And then adding on to this, like, three-dimensional aspect of it, I mean, that's, they probably said, well, they're going to need our help in 3,000 years. That's going to be how long it takes us to fully understand this.
I think that complexity, again, is what made this film so much more fun, especially when it comes to understanding the perception of time, right? Which is another reason why I really like this film, is because of how human beings perceive time and our understanding of time, right? Like, our understanding of time is linear. We can only perceive time in one direction, right? And so this movie, I like that they introduced that concept of, what if we didn't perceive time in a linear fashion? What if we could see our end and our beginning all at the same time?
If you can manipulate gravity and space-time in the way that they were showing, I mean, it really, time would not have the same meaning to them as it would to us, because whether you're moving forward or backwards, or you're speeding it up or slowing it down or warping it into intergalactic travel,
it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter at that point.
Absolutely.
Which I think kind of brings us to the ultimate twist of this film with her flashbacks.
Yeah. This time that I watched this movie, this is the 8th time probably that I've seen this film, by the way. I try to think of it as, these are not just flashbacks. These are memories. But memories are really funny, right? Because if you were to experience a memory of something that happens to you 10 years from now, would you be able to know that it's something that happened to you 10 years, that will happen to you 10 years from now? Or would you think it's something that maybe happened to you? Or how would you react to that?
See, and that's the thing that really kind of makes me question what was going on with this. Because it's like, she obviously has something that's visually troubling her multiple times throughout this thing, even before they really bring her on board. The first time that she's talking to Hawkeye, yeah, that she makes the comment of, no, even if you really know how to communicate, you can still lose somebody, which tells you, oh yeah, she's being troubled by this loss of whoever she had this kid with, but the kid is a big one, and they're doing that thing where somehow the kid is a big impact on the overall plot of it. But then at the end, when she fully learns how to understand the language, it somehow gives her the ability to remember both the past and the future. And it's just like, wait, so all these flashbacks were really flash forwards? It's a twist that came straight out of someone trying to be the next M. Night Shyamalan.
You thought so? I didn't think so. I thought it was a really good twist, to be honest. Because again, because they're memories, right? And watching this movie now, when they were first introduced, Louise was confused. And she continued to be confused for most of this because, I mean, how would you react if you started to remember things of events that haven't happened?
But the whole idea is that understanding this language changes the way that she thinks and perceives the world around her, which, by the way, is a real phenomenon. A very literal example from my personal life. In Japan, they have the exact same streetlights we do, red, yellow, and green. And then I was seeing a elementary school kid in one of my classes drawing a picture, and he drew a stoplight with red, yellow, blue. And I'm like, well, why did you make that blue? That should be green. And everyone in the class looked at me like I was crazy, like, no, no, it's blue. And they kept saying the Japanese word for blue. As I got better with the Japanese language, and once I got set into my head that you refer to that third light with the word for blue and not the word for green, all of a sudden, I woke up one day and I was literally seeing red, yellow, blue streetlights. Changing the word inside my mind literally changed how I perceived the streetlight. So that idea that it can change your perspective is a real phenomenon. Even if you accept the fact that just understanding the language allows you to perceive time the way that they do, she starts having these memories before she's learned anything about the language. She starts having the confusion about these future memories before any of that ever happened. And that's where it kind of starts to feel weird to me.
Yeah, and so we have to go back again. I've seen this many times, more than you have, so
explain it to me. Come on.
So she started to experience after she touched the glass with Abbott. So Abbott and Louise touched the glass. That is when Abbott like did something and transferred something to her, or I don't know what it was. But after that touch, quote unquote touch, because there was glass in between, then she started to have these experiences.
They started off the movie with some what appeared to be flashbacks. And
yeah, exactly. But Louise wasn't remembering those. She didn't start to remember until later.
But she seemed to have this like trouble, like she was trying to get over something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's not what we think.
Everything was always set, like from the very beginning. What you think she is having trouble getting over is these like images that they have shown of her with a child.
Exactly. And that's what the writer and the director wants you to think, right? They want you to think that this is what this character is struggling with. But in reality, they're just depressed. And the real struggle is just they were just in a bad spot. But this is a struggle that will happen to them. It's just that they are remembering it now as opposed to later. And to me, that execution of it, I think that you get to a point where you can either love it or hate it, right? I think once you go through and see these other little details that they added into the film, it started to kind of make more sense as to how that ending kind of paid off. And that transition from her just kind of going from, I'm just sad, to, oh, these are definitely not my memories, or memories of someone that I don't really know who this is.
Yeah, I mean, that's how quirky is that conversation with the Chinese general being like, what did I say to you again to convince you?
Yeah, right?
It's like, am I actually talking to the person that convinced me on the phone at this point? How do you not remember? How did you not know this?
Right, exactly. But that's the interesting part, right? Is that the general told her what she needed to tell him. And then at the end, he said, I don't know why, but I felt like you needed to hear this. And so it's a kind of another thing of like, that one I don't understand. It's possible that the aliens maybe influenced him too, in order for two of them to share this information so that she can then share this information to him, like in the past. I tend to appreciate the complexity of this whole time travel mind situation that's happening here, or memories, because it doesn't really get done, right? This time travel doesn't usually get done through memories. It's usually people physically travel, right? Or the mind travels or something, but it's not usually done in this way, which is through memories.
Right. It's not that they can travel through time. It is simply that they perceive time in both directions.
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, I really liked because not very many movies tend to play with time in this sense, right, of non-linear.
And I can agree with that. I do like seeing new original takes on a established and existing thing, right? Time travel is a plot element that has been handled many different ways. And I like Tenet because Tenet gave us time travel in a way that we haven't really seen before. And this is a similar thing. They are using time with a concept or an idea that has never really been approached before.
Yes. In Days of Future Past, for example, X-Men Days of Future Past, we did see the mind travel, right? The travel that Wolverine had from his older self to his younger self. Because, I mean, Hugh Jackman doesn't age, so it was the easier thing to do. That is, again, one of the ways of doing it, right? Then you have the endgame way of doing it, where you don't alter your existing timeline, you just create new ones. You have the Back to the Future timeline. You have all these other ones that have been done in different ways. But memories are definitely not on the same ballpark, and I really appreciate it going through that, right? Going through the motions of memories as opposed to something more direct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so with that, Nathan, should we jump into our TLDL?
Too long, didn't listen.
All right, and this is a section where we give you our closing thoughts on our movies or TV shows that we're discussing. So Nathan, Arrival, TLDL.
It is not your standard alien arrival story. They are trying to take a focus on a more nuanced and probably cautious approach that we actually would have. Yes, you have your military people that think, oh, we should just blow them up because anything advanced enough to travel the stars is going to be a threat to us. But at the same time, you also have all the world leaders saying, you know what, we can learn a lot from them. We need to figure out what we can figure out. And probably a fairly realistic take even on the aspect where the people first see a picture of these septopods and start going, you know, rioting and protesting, you know, it's like, oh, the save our species, you know, get kick them off and all that. All very probably realistic take on what can be expected, but at the same time, it is a slow pace. It does rely rather heavily on this surprise twist ending. And I can see it has its qualities, but it's probably not a sci-fi for everybody.
I'm in agreement with you. I think that this movie, again, I love Denis Villeneuve. I like his movies. I think he's a really good director. The vision that he brings is really good. I love the cinematography in this film. I love the soundtrack. I love the visuals and the set design and just how the story was written. I really, really appreciate it. But you're right. This is a slow-paced movie. This is not a sci-fi film for everyone. I know that you and I tend to like this rather slow pace, methodical, let's take our time with it, especially if they're really well written, then it's a very enjoyable experience for us. Not everything has to be action every 15 seconds. So if you like those kinds of movies, if you're not super into crazy sci-fi Star Trek action or Star Wars or anything like that, then yeah, this is going to be a movie for you. It's another film that I think it's really positive with a really positive message that's left at the end, right? And nowadays, more than ever, we kind of need positive messages for humanity, right? So that's another reason why I really like this movie, but yeah.
Well, Dan, with that, leave you with this final thought for the day. This movie did fairly well in the box office, bringing in $200 million. And at some point, someone is going to be strapped for an idea and realize they have this in their wheelhouse and go, you know what? It's time to write the sequel of what happens when humanity saves the septopods in 3,000 years. Are you looking forward to that, or is that just going to ruin this movie?
Oh my god, that will so ruin it. Because I have a feeling that it wouldn't be directed by Denis, because he'd be like, nah, I don't care about this anymore. And then it would be somebody else, and it's going to be basically Pacific Rim sequel all over again. But hey, if you think that a sequel to this movie is a good idea, definitely let us know by hitting us up on Facebook at
Streaming Thoughts and on Twitter at
Streaming Geek.
This has been Nathan.
And this has been Daniel.
Thank you for listening.